Coming up on Tech News Today, Uber lost its London license. Intel's Project Alloy is no more. Walmart wants to come into your home when you aren't there. And a new Facebook horror movie is even scarier than using Facebook. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1859, recorded Friday, September 22nd, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/TNT and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we Roomba up all the tech news and then empty it out.
That's it.
Empty it out with the filter onto you.
Maybe I think what I'm realizing anyways as you say that is what we need to add a little flair to the show is a Roomba that is like on the table at all times, just kind of moving around because they don't go over the edge, right? It would detect the edge and it wouldn't fall off and it would keep the table super clean.
I don't know if it has edge detection. I guess with stairs, right? Because you're usually not vacuuming your table.
That's true. Maybe we need to put some bumpers on the table to keep it on here. But
anyway, we mix the tech news up with the dirt on your floor. And that's what we do here.
Yeah, it's a magical combination.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Let's do this, Megan.
Uber has lost its license to operate in London, but Quartz says everyone should stop freaking out about it because they can still operate there. For now, London's transport regulator issued a statement saying that Uber was not fit and proper to hold a private hire operator license. Among the other many actions of Uber that could make this true, Transport for London said the license would be revoked due to Uber's use of the Greyball software that they use to avoid police and transport officials, as well as their company's approach to driver medical and safety checks. In response to the news, Uber said 3.5 million Londoners who use our app and more than 40,000 licensed drivers who rely on Uber to make a living will be astounded by this decision. They will probably not be astounded by the fact that Uber will continue to operate in London without a license, as they've done in many places before. Now, to be fair, they are legally allowed to continue. This was their license review day. But they can continue operating as they, continue to appeal during the appeals process, which could take months. They can continue to operate.
Oh, so it could take months. Okay.
Also, you should not worry because you can just use Lyft.
Well, I guess there's that. 2017. Wow, what a year for Uber, right? Because, I mean, apparently Uber, it was a pretty low friction business in London until this year happened, and then a whole bunch of things just kind of forced or at least pushed the TfL to take another look at the company, and that's why we ended up here. But I think London losing the license in London, even though it's not going away immediately, I mean, that's potentially a really big deal. London is a huge market by any standard. It's a global market. It's a hub of technology. And I don't know, it certainly sends a signal to Uber that it isn't just kind of smaller outlier areas that are resistant or whatever. Like that's a major signal coming from London.
Mm-hmm. And I should say, I just looked it up really quickly. I guess Lyft doesn't operate in the UK at all. So,
well, yeah, that makes sense. Lyft doesn't really have an international Lyft business yet. They're kind of working to broaden that out.
There are still taxi cabs that you could use.
And I'm sure there are a lot of those taxi cab drivers that are dancing in the streets while their cabs are parked at the lights right now as a result of this. Uber has been pushed out, denied access based on local licensing laws in a lot of areas. You can actually do a search and find long, long lists. Darwin in Australia's Northern Territory, kind of smaller area. Taiwan, Italy had a temporary ban in April. Denmark, lots of places. But in many of those cases, Uber addressed whatever the concern was, the charge, complaint, whatever. They operate under the assumption of, you know, move fast, break things, and then apologize later, right? Don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. And so, you know, many times they're welcomed back in eventually. Kind of hard to think that that wouldn't happen with London, but if it doesn't, that's a pretty major black mark on the company.
Right. I think what they're doing is just making them, you know, go through this process. Just, yeah. I mean, they have to just
like
wait
a slap
it out.
On the wrist.
Yeah.
Like, and come on.
They'll have to pay money. Who knows what'll happen? But yeah, it's just they can continue to operate, but they're, you know, the appeals process, I guess, starts October 13th and could go on for months.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. Intel's Project Alloy, its merged reality reference design headset, which was to offer inside out and completely wireless tracking, is apparently off the table. Intel cited a lack of interest from its partners, but does say it will continue to invest in the other aspects of AR and VR technology that it has its hands in. Those efforts include, of course, its RealSense depth sensing cameras and YGig based wireless headset support systems. This was going to kind of implement all of those things into a package, into a reference design, hopefully get a lot of partners on board. You know, it was part of Intel's big, like, cluster of announcements. I think it was last year where it was like, oh, Intel's kind of refocusing, redesigning, and entering these new markets in big ways. I was kind of interested to see this, but apparently they were showing it off at CES this year, and people who got the chance to kind of experience it said it really felt somewhat half-baked. The performance compared to a lot of the other stuff out there was not very good. And so I suppose maybe it's not that surprising that it didn't kind of get off the ground.
I feel like we should create a list of all of the press release related news that we've reported on about, like, amazing things someone's going to create
and then they
never get created.
Wah, wah, wah.
But I can't make that list because it's too depressing. they say that in their press release, Intel said their response to this, they said it was a great proof of concept showing what could be done in the future, which people are already doing. You checked out some of this stuff yesterday at VRDC.
Well, yeah. So I was at VRDC in San Francisco, and I didn't see Project Alloy necessarily, but I did finally get the chance to check out Windows Mixed Reality, and that I was actually really impressed by it. And actually, I only really got like 5 minutes with it, but the view was super sharp. It was a very unbroken, you know, a very seamless experience. Got to check out a few different moments. One of them was like this top-down view, like I was almost like I was in a gondola above Machu Picchu or whatever, looking down. I was just really impressed with how sharp everything felt. I'm so used to putting on these headsets and feeling like, man, if only things were clearer, it would trick my brain just a little bit more. And with the Windows system, I was really impressed. But that what they're doing there is very similar in some ways, I guess. It's still connected, so it's not quite the same as what Project Alloy was trying to do, but very similar in the partner kind of aspect, where Windows has, you know, a lot of partners all creating different styles and types of headsets for their platform. Intel, I think, hoped to do that here as well, but just couldn't quite, you know, raise above the noise of that the others were making. So there you
go. It's kind of sad because Intel was so huge, and then they kind of missed out on the mobile market. Like, they didn't, you know, they never had a phone or anything like that. So there was some kind of like, oh, well, maybe VR will be their thing. Mm-hmm. I think they're still counting on like AI being their thing. Like, they have still like bought up some companies that are really into artificial intelligence, and they've, you know, got working on some products there. So I think they're hoping for another hit.
Yeah, not just AI. They're also really, you know, getting big into autonomous driving, which, I mean, there's a lot of crossover there. So, yeah, they've got other avenues to explore, I suppose.
Walmart announced a new program today where they will deliver your groceries straight to your fridge. They'll beam them there like Star Trek. Actually, they're not going to do that. They're actually teaming with August Smart Locks to make it easy for delivery people to get into your house and put the groceries away so you don't have to. Here's how it will work. Order groceries on Walmart.com for delivery. If I'm at work or I'm out getting a massage, which someday I hope to be doing in the middle of the day, that delivery person will have a one-time use passcode that will work with your August lock. You'll get a notification on your phone that a delivery person is inside your home. You can even spy on them if you have a smart camera, or if you're creepy, or if you really have no sense of trust for anyone. You can spy on them. And then if you decide not to watch them, you'll get a notification that the person has left. What do you think about this, Jason?
That's about how I feel about this. It just, there's something weird about like arriving home, walking through the door and being like, oh, there's a package on my counter. Like, you know, that I know I didn't put there, that I know my family didn't put there, that someone just had access to my phone. I would have to get over that in order to be okay with this, I suppose. And yeah, having a camera, like being able to actually monitor, you know, via the August app with a security camera inside your home, I suppose that helps. Even if you're not watching, that at least has it in their mind that there is some sort of a record of this, you know. And I'm sure when they use that one-time passcode, it's logged who, you know, that happened at that point. Their systems are going to be able to track who it is and everything. So I'm sure it's totally safe, and I'm sure they're thinking about that, because that's going to be a big hurdle that anyone's going to have to get over with. We're just not used to the idea of random stranger person letting themselves into our home to do anything. And so it feels weird to me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel weird to me. I mean, we let people come in and out of our house, you know, if they're working on it or something, because we have a smart lock, and then we just give them a one-time key code, and then, you know, we never use it again. Or you can, you know, set it so it's only, you know, only during that time can that person come in. I don't have any cameras inside watching what anyone is doing, but I like this idea. I wish it would go one step further and cook the food for me.
You get home and they're like, and here you go, see you later.
Yeah. I mean, I know I could actually very easily hire a person to do all that if I had a lot of money, which I don't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you put it that way, I guess when I think about like at our home, like we have a house cleaner, but that's someone that we've vetted, you know what I mean? That we actually trust. We have some sort of an actual relationship with this person, and we have for years. So I feel, I don't know, I feel better about that. Or babysitter, you know, like there are certain people that we do let into our home that aren't us, and they know how to get into our home, but there's a personal relationship there that's behind that. This still feels a little too random to me. And it's not even that I think they would do anything unsavory while they were there, because there's probably a lot of checkpoints. It just kind of feels strange to be like, okay, random person, go ahead and open my door and do something. However, we did talk about this last year, about this time. Amazon, according to the information at that time, had reported that also Amazon is doing this. Their tests do include August. It also includes Garage.io for garage access. So they're kind of all moving in this direction. We'll see how successful that that direction ends up being, I suppose.
Well, Bleep Blurp in the chat room, he adds another step that I would also like, that they would cook your food for you and then actually put the food in your mouth. So, because wow. I got texts to send.
I'm so busy on my phone right now. Could you just feed me, random Amazon or Walmart
person?
You
know that's where we're headed. It just won't be delivery people. It'll be robots.
I don't want to go where we're headed, apparently. Hewlett-Packard has plans to cut 10% of its workforce, according to Bloomberg sources. That amounts to 5,000 of its 50,000 workers. The cuts are expected to happen by year's end, and it follows a trend within the company where it's trying to trim down its divisions as a reaction to the strength of the cloud. Just as one example, that's powering the business of its competitors, big competitors like Google and Amazon. CEO Meg Whitman said during an analyst call earlier that they're cutting layers from the company to make them more efficient. She said, create an internal structure and operating mode that is simpler, nimbler, and faster, and just kind of, I don't know, trimming the fat, even though I hate using that expression in this regard, but it kind of seems like that's their company goal right now.
Speaking of trimming the fat, I'd also want that robot to trim the fat off of all my food. Still on the robot that's going to put food right in my mouth.
See, you see it as a robot, but I see it as a person.
I'm a forward looker.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking in.
All right. You're a thought leader.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of the future.
So Hewlett-Packard, you'll remember in 2015, split up to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and Hewlett-Packard. Hewlett-Packard is the PCs and the printers, and then Hewlett-Packard Enterprise is the more services and products. So this is Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And they haven't confirmed this yet. This was just a report from Bloomberg sources, people familiar with the matter. But I think it's the cloud. Like, the cloud is ultra competitive, And, you know, we think about like Microsoft being behind in the cloud, like Google being behind Amazon, you know, so Hewlett-Packard is definitely behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe they'll catch up.
Yeah, I mean, although at the same time, the same earnings call that Meg Whitman was talking about this stuff recently, they reported record revenue growth, second quarter in a row. That was just last month. First time in 7 years that the PC and printer sales increased over the same quarter. They had just spun off the software division in an $8.8 billion spinoff merger with Micro Focus. So a lot of change happening, but it seems to be, you know, I whether it's related to their success in their earnings or not directly, I mean, some of those changes seem to be in the right direction. So Meg knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, Sam Moskovich will tell you why you should get off of Facebook and go watch a horror movie about Facebook instead. But first, let's take a minute to thank the Ring Video Doorbell. They're the sponsor of this episode. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, make your home safer. Today, over 1 million people use the amazing Ring Video Doorbell to help protect their homes. Ring knows home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. That's why they're extending that same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. I have one of these bad boys right here. You can see it's a nice, solid piece of kit. You've got the camera right here, the floodlights that are incredibly bright, a little motion detection. The motion activated camera and floodlight connects to your phone. So you get HD video, you get two-way audio. It lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. So you can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. With Ring's floodlight cam, when things go bump in the night, you'll know immediately what it is, whether you're home or away. The Ring Floodlight Cam lets you keep an eye on your home. Ring Floodlight Cams offer the ultimate in home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. And it's also named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. Monitor every corner of your property when you get the Ring of Security kit. All kits include a Ring video doorbell, of course, and your choice of either 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams. Connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks, the hubs that you have for added convenience, monitoring, and security. Make your home even smarter than it was before. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/TNT. That's ring.com/TNT, and we thank Ring for their support of Tech News Today. Hey, somebody's knocking at the door. Who is that? I think it's Sam Moskovich from Ars Technica. You like that bit, Sam?
No, I hated it.
Oh, okay,
I'm
sorry.
Really do the knocking. I feel like I was really powerless in this setup. So thanks a lot. Way to start this terribly.
Oh, man, I feel like I'm going to be playing catch-up this whole time now. Hey, you're hard at work right now on a write-up about an epic battle that's brewing between PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Epic's Fortnite. What exactly is going on here? Tell us about it.
I like that little pun you had there, an epic battle, indeed.
You know?
Because now, are either of you familiar with the phenomenon known as PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds? It's a long mouthful of a sentence, one of the worst name games ever, and it tends to be called a PUBG in short. It just broke records for having the most concurrent players on the PC gaming service Steam at one time, meaning more people are paying $40 and playing that game at the same time in the tune of 1.3 million people than people who log in and play games that are free. That's momentous that people are not only all playing at the same time, but have all bought in a world where games can just be had for free.
What is so unique about that particular player mode?
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is a evolution of these mod modes that are essentially known as Battle Royale.
Yeah.
If you've watched that old family-friendly Japanese classic in which a bunch of children, school children, are put onto a single island and forced to kill each other until only one remains. We always wondered when a video game kind of take on that would happen, and it's come in the form of a mod that was added to a bunch of different games, military shooters like Arma 2, Arma 3. There's a zombie-themed one, H1Z1. And the same guy was involved in all of these, and he went on to just make his own game and slap his own name on it. So they've been doing incredibly well, and we've all kind of wondered when a blatant clone might show up to essentially take some familiar things like grabbing a gun and shooting at a bunch of people on an island and having another company's twist on it. Well, that is coming next week in the form of Fortnite Battle Royale. Fortnite is currently a not quite free-to-play game in which you have to pay in order to get in early. It's eventually going to be free-to-play, and it currently exists as a you and some friends can cooperate and fight a bunch of zombies while crafting and doing all this other stuff. It's like a hodgepodge of a bunch of different genres. Well, next week, you're going to be able to download that game for totally free. You don't have to buy in yet to play this mode, just the Battle Royale one. And the issue is that the folks at Bluehole, who are the South Korean publishers of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, have put out a statement saying that they are concerned about how similar Fortnite Battle Royale is to PUBG, calling it, oh goodness, a replication, replica, or I can't remember the exact phrasing, but it was one of these things where they sort of bordered right on the edge of taking any actual legal action, hinting at that they were responding to the community and that they're looking into their options from here on out.
Isn't this essentially a copy of Hunger Games or like Lord of the Flies? Like, isn't this sort of a story, that's been around forever?
That old childhood classic of children landing on an island and killing each other.
Lord of the Flies.
It's been a pop culture gem, certainly for a long time. The issue that I think Bluehole is looking at, and that I've confirmed by testing out this Fortnite Battle Royale mode, is that some... In fact, many of the elements are downright the exact same. Everybody gathers in a room of 99 players. You land on this island in the exact same way where you have sort of a clock tick before the match starts. Everyone then hops onto an airplane that shoots in a vertical line across the map before landing randomly on the island wherever they choose. Then little safety radii appear. This is sort of how PUBG works in terms of it has this circle that constantly shrinks, guiding everyone from a giant map into slowly converging on each other and having to kill each other. So the issue is not just that it's inspired by PUBG and some of these others, it's that it is lifting a lot of the looks and mechanics and exact timings of PUBG. So I liken it to, in the article that's going to run at Ars Technica tomorrow, you might think it's Super Mario compared to Sonic the Hedgehog. But when I look at it, it looks to me like Super Mario versus Super Luigi. A lot of similarities. Now, Fortnite has its own twists and tweaks, but they're not all very apparent. I go into that at Ars Technica about the Fortnite-specific stuff that comes in here that Epic may eventually point to and say, no, it's not a copy. We're doing our own thing. But I do think that if for any reason something comes out of it, it's going to be a very interesting conversation indeed.
Maybe more than a conversation, maybe some sort of legal action?
That's a good question, because Bluehole is in South Korea. Funnily enough, they lost a giant infringement lawsuit back in 2009 because it was determined that one of their games had lifted wholesale assets and art from another game. And they had to pay up to another South Korean game company, NCSoft. So they're certainly familiar with South Korean infringement law. I couldn't tell you exactly as to whether a South Korean company can sue a Western company like Epic. Epic does have an office in South Korea. It's unclear whether they'd be able to connect the dots enough to keep it just in one country or have to deal with any other sort of infringement law. It's a good question. There's not a ton of precedent in terms of when video games copy each other. We've got different cases where, for example, Pac-Man clones came out, and I know Atari sued Philips a long time ago because of a blatant Pac-Man clone. They won that suit, but it's been quite some time since a suit like that has really gone all the way through. In my article, I talk about a Simpsons game that Sega didn't like and exactly how that transpired. So it's not exactly clear, and I think generally companies don't like going to court. They prefer to settle, and in fact, that's what Sega did in their case, because if there's a real decision and that sets precedent, the precedent usually favors the little guy over the big one, at least in terms of financial impact.
Got it. So Steam has had an ongoing issue with fake game reviews that are posted to its store pages. The Campo Santo developer that called out PewDiePie last week, we talked about that on a show, for saying a highly derogatory word during a Let's Play, got his store page review bombed, with negative reviews. Sam, how is Steam apparently addressing this problem?
Yeah, the concept of a review bomb has been around for some time. You tend to notice it more at Amazon. It's a very vulnerable place where people can just pile on without necessarily having bought the item in question and essentially give a bunch of one-star reviews while commenting about the company for something that may not have to do with the product. That may very well be relevant to whether or not you want to buy it, but it does can also be sort of weaponized. Now, Steam being essentially the largest computer download game store in the West is currently kind of getting gamed in the same way, or it was at least, especially in the case of Camposanto having filed DMCA takedowns against PewDiePie and angry gamers popping on to express their displeasure by just bombing that review page, not only with bad reviews, but then upvoting each other's bad reviews, creating sort of a perfect swarm that made it seem like it was all legitimate. Now, Steam finally responded by saying, yeah, we've been looking at this. We've tried to make it our storefront be less vulnerable to these sorts of attacks and vulnerabilities. And the result they came up with was sort of weird. It's a big line chart that's now smacked at the very bottom of every store page. What they're essentially saying is, we're going to combat this by having some data that you have to scroll all the way through and then pick at. The review histogram is what it's called. So the idea is, let's say you're interested in a game and you see it's got a review that at the top that says mixed or kind of negative, and you go, huh, why is that? You scroll all the way down past, I want to say, 8 different blocks of content about images and critic picks and how the game works and news updates, a lot of stuff. You finally get to these bars. And if you're watching the web version of this, you can see that there's blue bars going up from the line that represent positive reviews during a certain day, week, or month. And then you've got orange bars that are negative going downward that represent the same day, week, or month. So you can see on a given day, week, or month, perhaps, oh, wow, a bunch of negative reviews showed up just on this day. And then you can click on them and see, oh, they're all complaining because the developer added a mode that really stunk. Or, oh, they're all complaining by referencing this certain cartoon frog that I don't quite understand. So you can sort of see what it is that deluge of comments came from and determine whether or not it's relevant to your purchase or not. So I think that's some interesting and relevant data. And I think it's a kind of a cool way to present it, but it's buried and the bars are all set up in this way. It looks like someone just opened up Microsoft Word and tried to make a line chart that way. And I remember doing that in 10th grade in school, and those never looked very good. And I think of all the people in the world who can take data and present it in a beautiful way, you'd think it'd be the guys at Valve, those video game folks.
So the idea here is that a lot of these negative reviews aren't really about the game at all. They're maybe because the person that developed the game has a different politics or a different gender or something that the reviewer is angry about that has nothing to do with the game.
It could be. Yeah, that's the question. Anytime something like this comes up where you see a bunch of reviews come up and you don't know exactly why, and maybe it's a coordinated campaign where people don't actually dislike the game itself, but just come up with fake excuses or fake logic and reviews. And I think that the histogram lets you at least connect the dots a little bit more because sometimes it is a legitimate issue. Or maybe it's that outside of the game issue might be relevant to you as a consumer anyway. Ultimately, what Steam said was, and the reason they made this happen was because they found that these review bomb periods where there'd be a deluge of reviews in 1 or 2 or 3 days didn't ultimately change the overall reviews before and after. They found if a game was being positively reviewed and then a bomb came, the reviews that were written were generally good, but the sales and other things were impacted. And they said, we want to make sure that when people see these reviews that they go, oh, these are relevant to the game. But ultimately, the problem is, and what I wrote about at Ars, is that there's a lot of other ways that people are exploiting the user-generated content stuff at Steam. Some forums have been bombed with terrible, terrible stuff, really elaborate racist memes that are orchestrated inside of a Steam game forum. And Steam doesn't have a support team to deal with this stuff. They tell the developer, oh, if there's a bunch of racist, terrible crap appearing on your little forum page, that's your mess to clean up, Mr. Small Game Developer. And if you're like a 3-man team just trying to make it with your little indie game and a bunch of jerks show up on your page, then that's your mess. And it's already tough enough as a little 3-man team to make it on Steam. So I just think this is ultimately a chance for a lot of people to look at Steam and go, y'all need to maybe take all that money you're making and hire some more support staff to deal with some of the bad parts.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm sure most of us have seen that other horror show based on Facebook. It's called The Social Network. But Sam, you saw... I actually like that movie, so I don't know why I said that. Sam, you saw an entirely different one, perhaps more classically categorized as an actual horror movie based on Facebook. Tell us what you thought of that one. And it has a lame title, I think. Friend Request.
Friend Request, a horror movie that is now out in theaters. It apparently came out in Germany in early 2016 and came and went, even though it's all American cast. This is a film that takes a popular, selfie-loving, Facebook-living teenage girl, early in her college career, and you see her living her life through Facebook, and all of a sudden things go bad because there's a girl in one of her classes, a girl named Marina, who looks at the popular girl, gets really jealous, sends her a friend request. And popular girl Laura looks at the friend request and goes, she has zero friends. That's strange. And it all goes eerie from there. Now, I've seen my fair share of cheesy and weird movies, horror and otherwise, that try to involve technology and try to be entertaining as well. And what I found was that Friend Request was surprisingly solid. We're now entering autumn. Sky's getting dark. The leaves are starting to fall. You're looking for that cheeseball funny movie to lead you into the October Halloween horror season. And before we get, deluged with stuff on Friday the 13th, we have this. And I thought it was quite good. Certainly not Citizen Kane. Certainly not as good as horror movies like It Follows. It's not going to be a classic of the genre. But I did think that it essentially took this technology concept and was pretty nimble about it. Just in terms of having actors who are totally solid as teenage actors, really great tension building. One of my favorite things about this movie. Now, when you have your cell phone next to a speaker and it does that little sound effect in the speaker, they turn that into the sort of Friday the 13th, Jason Voorhees is coming. Like that becomes the creepy sound effect that Marina, who we find is a witch who like lives spiritually through the computer or whatever. That's how you know she's about to make bad things happen. I thought that was really cool. I think it actually doesn't come off as a cheap horror movie, has a lot of diverse set design. So it's infinitely watchable. And when it does do things that involve technology, for the most part, they're legit. There are a couple of gaping logic holes that drove me insane at the end of the movie. But when it just, like, for example, it has 4chan show up, kind of blink and you'll miss it, but it's totally solid the way it does that. I appreciate what that happens in a movie and when tech appears, but it doesn't weigh the movie down.
Have you seen that classic old-fashioned film, Single White Female, Sam?
Not in a long time.
It reminds me of this, so maybe they'll see them next.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, gosh, this is... Well, there's another movie we were talking about before I came on. It was called Unfriended, and... That is even more of a movie that this one rips off. Unfriended came out in 2015, 2014. You can get it on video on demand anywhere. And it takes place entirely on one person's desktop. Everything happens as a Skype window or a Facebook window or a web browser. And it's really clever in terms of its gimmickry. And if you haven't heard of that, I would say use this new movie as a reminder to maybe check that one out. However, I would say Friend Request is more watchable in a theater, more fun, more everybody kind of gasping in the room together kind of thing. Both ways, the Facebook as the material for a horror movie genre, I think, is just going to get richer and richer because young people living their life on the internet until bad things happen is juicy stuff, in my opinion.
And finally, lots of people are talking about Super Mario Odyssey. I think it looks great. I can't wait to play it at some point, maybe during my lifetime. Are you standing on a soapbox right now, Sam? Do you have something to say about this?
I just wanted to say that any website that goes and writes a preview about Super Mario Odyssey is doing it wrong. Unless they never got to play it before. As soon as I played it at E3, I said to myself, I don't need to play it again because I know when it comes out, it's going to be solid. It might be terribly short or maybe there's going to be some terrible thing with Princess Peach or who knows what. But there are previews coming out now. They explain about other worlds in the game, about other secrets and surprises. Nintendo is forcing those critics to keep their mouths relatively shut and not reveal too much stuff. But I would just tell you, watch those basic trailers, read a couple of previews that already exist, and then stop. This is going to be a good game, and Nintendo has always been really good at packing little fun secrets into its worlds. I already regret having played as much as I did at E3 because I want to take my Nintendo Switch and just hole up wherever I can take it, since it's portable, which is so nice, and just tear through all and find all these little moon pieces, because it's, you're not getting stars this time, you're getting little moons. There's a spoiler. Anyway, really looking forward to it, and if you don't want to heed my advice, there are a lot of previews of the game that have come out in the past 48 hours. Ars Technica was not invited to any of these events, and we're still sour about it. But I swear it's not sour grapes. It's just that I can't wait to play the game, and that's going to be, gosh, in a month. So, you know, keep an eye out for that.
Nice. Will do. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us, Sam. Tell people what you're working on right now and where they can follow your work online.
Well, head to ArsTechnica.com, ArsTechnica.com. It's on the screen if you're looking at the video feed. At Sam Red, if you want to watch me yell about the world, which, you know, is always going great as of late. And this weekend, I will just be playing video games. There are too many good video games coming out. SteamWorld Dig 2, Project Cars 2, Tooth and Tail, Divinity Original Sin 2. That one's got the dumbest name, but is probably the best. It's an amazing RPG. Oh, God, Heat. Oh, God, I blanked on the last one. There's one, Heat Signature, I think is the name of it. It's, I'm looking at my phone to make sure I got that one right. Yes, Heat Signature. Look that one up. All of those, that's like five games. That's too much stuff. That's my Twitter page with a giant piece of pizza on it on the screen if you're looking. That's the best slice of pizza I've ever eaten. I'm going to let you guys go. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Thank you, Sam. And now I'm hungry. Great. Thanks. Take care.
We got some feedback. Dana Schwartz sent us this Gizmodo story about how the Baltimore Ravens plan to hand out DNA testing kits to 55,000 fans at a game. And that didn't go so well. The Origin 3 kits had cheek swabs and genetic analysis testing for four different genes, including one that was supposed to test for athletic ability. Just before kickoff, the master plan had to be scrapped after privacy concerns, including those expressed by the federal government. Thank you very much for the tip, Dana, who is our East Coast TNT correspondent. That's what he would like to be called. Yeah, Origin is, there are some reputable DNA agents, DNA companies, DNA testing companies, mail companies. I wouldn't trust necessarily the ones that are handed out at a football game. Gizmodo also had tested Origin. This is Origin with a 3 instead of an I or something. One of the letters is replaced by a 3, and I don't know which one. But and they said it was worse than useless. So it was basically a horoscope. I mean, and if you believe in horoscopes, I'm sorry.
A horoscope with your DNA attached to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, some privacy concerns there with your horoscope.
All right. Well, if you can't trust the NFL, who can you trust?
Exactly. So I got my iPhone today. The iPhone 8.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
Space gray.
It looks like a cardboard box.
No, this isn't the phone. Oh. We can take a look at it, I believe. I have already opened it, spoiler alert, and turned it on and everything. And I was amazed because
they both look the same.
Although the back, I can see. No one else can see, but the
okay,
back,
so the
is
back
a lot shinier.
Definitely different. This is the glass back. You can see by my fingerprints. Versus the iPhone 7. These are both the 8 Plus and the 7 Plus. So that is basically the biggest difference. And
wow, they are so similar, though. I mean, it's really just the finish, but otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, the screen is pretty similar, too. Oh, no, don't delete all my music.
That was a close one. Let's see what else you can do to your phone.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, I was amazed that I was able to set it up with my old phone, mm-hmm. and I was like shouting in joy because it's like how you set up the Apple Watch, you shoot your camera at the other phone, and you said that Android phones already do that.
Yeah, so they can link up to each other during the setup process, mm-hmm. and kind of zap it over or rely on a cloud backup, mm-hmm. of some sort, like a snapshot in the cloud.
Right. So everybody is asking me, why did you get this? Why aren't you waiting for the 10? Are you going to get the 10 too? I got the iPhone 8 because that's what Leo told me to get, and I do what he says. We don't get review units. He likes to buy them. He likes for us to have the most recent phone so that we can tell you about them. And, you know, he doesn't like to get review units because then you're biased sometimes. So, yeah, that's why he's probably going to get the 10. I don't think I will also get the 10 because who needs that much phone? I don't. But we'll see. So if you take a look at the box, it comes with all the regular stuff.
AirPods, right? Oh, no.
No, it doesn't come with AirPods. The Lightning connector.
They make it look like there's AirPods in there, though. This is like...
Yeah.
This is like... wouldn't you love to have AirPods? Because doesn't this remind you of AirPods? And mm-hmm. then you open it up and you realize there's a cable, and then you realize you have something to buy now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it
still,
works, right?
Still
that's
no headphone jack. But if you watch the screensavers a couple weeks ago, there a guy showed you how to make a headphone jack. But these are lightning connector.
Yeah, you get a little dongle in the box.
You get not only do you get the lightning connector headphones, you also get the lightning connector dongle for anything for your regular headphones. So that's good. Nice of them. Yeah. And then your little box. So that's pretty much it. Let's play around with the camera. I haven't done that because that is different. And we should have allow. Can you see that?
Wow, it really is. Just so you're going to be playing with this all night.
This is the portrait camera, which is the natural light. So let me take a photo. Let me take a portrait of you.
Okay, I'll strike a pose.
Can't see that. Ooh, contour light.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
Oh, wait, you looked away at the last second, but let's see. How did it, that's great. Take a look at that.
Oh, perfect. I blinked at exactly the wrong time. This is what it looks like when I'm sleeping while sitting.
Even though your eyes are closed, you look very distinguished, I think. Let's
That's
try
a
it.
Really
Again,
weird
try,
picture.
Okay, let's try one more. All stay right. with me. Ooh, stage I'll, light.
Okay.
Okay, you kept your eyes
thank
open
you.
That time.
Yes, thank you, Kevin. For
look,
the,
look, take a look.
Is that
it
one
went,
better?
We erased the background.
Whoa.
It didn't work. That's the stage light.
Oh, probably the mic gets in the way a little bit.
Yeah,
of that,
it's a portrait mode, so they don't expect you to have a mic. But I'm sure I could probably have fixed that if I'd waited a little bit long. So there we go.
Just wipes out everything behind me.
Yeah.
Oh, wireless charging.
Wireless. Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. I ordered. That is a really nice photo of you, I think. I ordered this from the Apple site, and it's $50. I think it was like $56. It's the Mophie wireless charging base.
Oh, okay.
Any Qi charger would work. So I also ordered this from Amazon, and I'll put a link in the show notes. This was $12.
And it's called the Fast Charge.
It is.
You'll never take it off of that charging pad.
It's from Senio, S-E-N-E-O. And I think it was regularly $16, but I think I used some code, so I'll put that code in there too. So
okay.
$56.
So you're going to enter the wireless charging world. Are you excited about that?
I don't like how they call it wireless charging. There's still a wire.
Not but between I, the phone and
yeah,
the thing you're
I know, but you
on.
Have to plug this in. Like, I want a robot to feed me, and I want charging just in the air so we walk through it and charge all our devices.
Okay. That sounds safe.
No. I'm excited. But if you watched the show yesterday, when you were out, I talked to Jeffrey Fowler. He said you had to put it exactly in the right place or you'd wake up in the morning and your phone wasn't charged.
Nobody wants to wake up in the morning and think that their phone is fully charged. And then you're so busy in the morning and you don't have time to actually charge it because it wasn't charged overnight.
So I just got this today, but I will probably take a look at whether the $12 works as well as the $50 and let you know.
Yeah, cool. Right on. Well, happy new phone. I hope that you enjoy it.
Okay, I hope you
will.
I do too.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Of course, leave us a short voicemail if you like, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to our show, and we would love it if you did, twit.tv/TNT. Go to any podcast network of your choice and subscribe to our show or shows. Subscribe to Jason's All About Android if you like that. iOS Today if you like my show and, of course, this show. And subscribe your friends. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm going to post all these pictures of Jason. So you can find that.
Post that first one, please, because it's a keeper.
I'm going to perfect the stage light and post it. And you will only be able to find it if you go to @MeganMaroney.
Nice. I will do that. I think I follow you. I follow you on Twitter. Yeah.
I don't know if you do anymore because I corrected your spelling today.
That's okay. I can take it. I do follow you. I would never unfollow you. I'm @JasonHowell. Thanks to Kevin for editing and being our technical director today and occasional fancy transitions. Also, thanks to Mario for helping out in the studio. Thanks to the folks that we have here sitting in the studio catching us live. We really appreciate you taking the time to sit down here and watch the show with us. It's been a lot of fun. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.